Okay, we are going to start with the Q&A session. The first question comes from Alejandro Vigil, Cygnus, and Jorge Guimaraes, Haitong. Which is the impact in our guidance, 2018 guidance, of the capital gains obtained from the recent disposals? Can we quantify these capital gains? And if these capital gains to be defined will impact as well to the dividend?
So our commitment in the guidance given with the first quarter result was close to 3 billion. Today we are comfortable with this figure of 3 billion without taking into account the extraordinary results that we have to register due to the recent divestment. At the end of the financial year, as normally we used to do, its destination of this capital gain will be studied in order to establish efficiency measures that will improve the group result in the future years, as normally we used to do every year.
The second question comes from Carolina Dores, Morgan Stanley, and she's asking about the possible extrapolation to the dividend per share increase of 7% in this interim dividend to the final of the year.
Well, as I already announced, our plan is our commitment was to increase the dividend in line with increase of results. So now we are already just giving a signal with the 7%, but I think the final word is in hands of the AGM. But I think our intention is already to continue increasing the dividend in line with the growth of result.
Third questions come from Rui Diaz, UBS, and is regarding as well to the dividend policy. Given the high level of visibility of your current growth plans to 2022, could you potentially consider a more visible dividend growth policy over the same period?
Well, if I don't remember bad, and I think Pepe, you can correct to me, I think our commitment was, if the things are going online, what we are already just planning, and I think for the time being we are seeing that this result has been accelerated, our commitment was to reach a level of dividend on the range of 0.4 euros per share by with the result of 2022. So I think we are a company, what we try to fulfill our plan, we are working on this plan to achieve these numbers. And I think that is, and what you can already see with the visibility we are giving to you, we are quite comfortable that this is in line to be achieved.
Next question comes from a kind of a large group of people, Alejandro Vigil, Cygnus, Meike Becker, Bernstein, Stefano Becciato, Credit Suisse, Javier Suarez, Mediobanca, Henry Weiber, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and Rui Diaz, UBS, and is regarding the how what kind of things we can expect from the proposal of regulatory intervention to the nuclear and hydro in Spain. If you don't mind, and for basically for the English speaker, we would like to answer this question in Spanish. Thank you.
Thank you, Ignacio. Try to, as Ignacio is saying, to explain that in Spanish. So the first thing, that is noises which are not new. So, perdón, es posible.
But it's possible that those make these statements that are not new do not have the correct information. And all you have to do is look at our balance sheet and to see what this is all about. So firstly, let me explain to you why these assets are not fully amortized. And, well, I'd just like to give you a few figures. And if I'm not wrong, I think that at the end of 2017, the net asset book value for hydro assets was close to 4.8 billion euros. And in the case of nuclear plants, this amount totaled 3.2 billion euros. But why do we have these values? Well, it's very straightforward, and that is the legal and accounting regulations mean that we have to amortize the civil works in the concession period, bearing in mind that these electromechanical equipment have 50 years of life. So that means that we still have another 35 years to go to carry out the amortization of the civil work. And then secondly, the equipment is amortized both in the nuclear sector as well as in the hydro sector, according to what we consider to be the useful life. So throughout their life, well, they are replaced. There's equipment that lasts 40 years, especially electronic equipment, and which are amortized in a much shorter period. But just to give you some figures, and since I've been working for the company since 2001, I think we've invested in hydro, we've invested something like 3.8 billion euros in order to replace equipment, to replace them with other equipment. But in the case of the nuclear sector, the figure's even larger than that. I think that it's nearly 2 billion euros in the period. So these are the figures that have been contemplated. And the second issue has to do with the results achieved. And if you want, all you have to do is look at our balance sheet to see what the results were like in 2017. And this has been made public, and you can see this information. And in the particular case of nuclear production, it's an independent company, which is Iberdrola Energía Nuclear, that's in the mercantile registry. But you could also see this in the annual accounts. And if I'm not mistaken, I've been repeating this many times in recent years, since the very high taxes were imposed in 2013. Since 2013 until this point in time, we're paying between 700 and 800 million euros in this period of additional taxes that didn't exist before. So that means that the nuclear power stations have reported losses. And last year, I think that we lost just over 100 million, and the year before that, to more than 200 million. So this is something that is happening all the time. And as regards the hydro business, well, last year, it is true that it was a very dry year, but last year they also obtained a negative result. So I think that these are data, and those that are mentioning this possibly didn't have any access to this information, information that was made public some time ago, so that it can be consulted by anybody that wishes to make any comments on it.
Next questions come from Meike Becker, Bernstein, Carolina Dores, Morgan Stanley, and Stefano Becciato, Credit Suisse. Considering your most recent discussion with the Spanish government, what is your current expectation of the rate of return for regulated activities in Spain and the development of the recently reduced taxes in generation?
Well, I think related remuneration on the...
Bueno, las remuneraciones reguladas, me parece que fuimos...
Those ones we are, that the remuneration of regulated activity were not based in a WACC, but based in the Spanish bond, which I think is not reflecting the reality of the businesses. All the countries are based in WACC. I think it's good news that the national, the Spanish regulator is now announcing that they would like to move that to a system based in WACC. I think we are in this moment in discussion about the figures we are already proposing, but I think it's good that at the end we are already standardizing the system, the Spanish system remuneration in the international system that everybody is recommending on the same manner. Related to the taxation, so I think we've been for a long time saying that the prices in Spain are artificially inflated as a consequence of the taxes we are supporting. So I think it's the fact that this temporary reduction of these taxes are already just automatically being reflected in the market prices, which I think that gave them the news is that that is good for the market price, which is already fall down, and as well is good for the increase of the Spanish competitivity. We are already changing the way how the Spanish electricity is being. Traditionally, we are being exporting electricity. Now, with the high taxes in Spain, we've been importing. So, since these taxes has been already reduced, the flow has been more equalized, and that is a positive effect in the Spanish balance of payments, which I think that's good as well for the country.
Next question comes from Harry Wyburd from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Press reports suggest CNMC's strike is right, is looking to the balance sheet valuation of power generation assets after large write-downs from Naturgy and Viesgo. Is there a chance that Iberdrola may be required to change accounting values for plants, and what could be the potential impact on book values and ongoing depreciations?
I think we received this letter from the SNV. We have already just replied. I think I imagine that this is a consequence, as you mentioned, not for Naturgy, it's a consequence mostly because how is depreciated the nuclear assets between ourselves and Endesa. So, because the rest are almost everybody already just doing in the same manner. So, how we are depreciating? I think we are depreciating, as I mentioned before, our hydroelectric asset according with the accounting rules, which is the legal terms, which is civil works according with the life of the concession, the equipment according with the technical life of this installation. In the case of nuclear, 40 years, which is the life, the standard life of this asset, and in case of the rest of the equipment as well, with the standard life of that one, which I think is as well on the range of 40 years. So I think that is what is the tense that we are depreciating, which is not been changed for a long time. I think we are already using this criteria. In the case of those one which is concession, according with the concession, in the case those one has a limit of life, which is the nuclear, according with that one, and if this extended, we will extend it. But I think in the for time being, we know the nuclear is 40 years is the end of the operational life if we are not making additional investment.
Next question comes from Rui Diaz, UBS, is regarding the recent disposal in the UK. And then he's saying that Spain is now the only region where Iberdrola holds non-contracted conventional power generation. And would it make sense to reduce exposure to these activities sooner rather than later? The possible disposal of the Spanish generation assets.
I think it's not in our mind for the time being. I think in the case of Britain, the size was, I think the criteria we use for divestment, as you know, always is the same one. Either because geographically it's not fitting in our geographies, either because the size is not big enough, or because I think the returns we are giving is we are not seeing future for those ones. So in the case of Britain, there are two. They are not giving profitability, and second, the size was small just for being already involved in this business. And we've been trying for a long time to try to expand this business with certain projects, but the auction has been made for capacity. The payment was so low they were not justifying the investment. So that's why we decided to leave, as we did in the past in another country like Chile, where we sold as well all our conventional power generation. So,
question number eight comes from Jorge Alonso, Societe Generale, and Stefano Bezzato, Credit Suisse. It's regarding the amount of energy hedge for 2019 and our view in power prices in Spain for the expected output in 2020.
Paco, contestas tú.
Well, we have, as you know, we have 100% of 2018 volumes committed and also close to 90% of 2019 exposed production already committed to. With the current forward prices, we expect to close next year around 2 to 3 euros per megawatt hour above these year prices. And about 2020, that is too far for the time being, is in the same level of forward prices that 2019.
Next question comes from Jorge Alonso, Societe Generale. What are the next renewables tender auction Iberdrola will participate in? Iberdrola views on US wind offshore new wave? And finally, where and when new projects could be developed?
You are about
our view on the renewable tender auctions that we are in condition to participate.
Well,
in
we are months. Already in this moment participating. We have already submitted an offer for a Connecticut auction, which I think is going, I feel is by the year end, is going to be already take the decision. Now is already another auction for Long Island, which I think we are going to participate as well. I think those days is going to be made already the proposals. And I think we are already hearing another ones, which I think is, which potentially is going to be in the next few years or months, which is New York, which is, I think, someone more in Connecticut, someone more in Massachusetts. I think that is, in Rhode Island as well is going to be some more. I think that is bad for the time being. We are already participating in one in Connecticut, and we are going to make some proposal for Rhode Island, which is going to be presented in the next few days.
Next question, number 10, come from Meike Becker, Bernstein, and is regarding the price cap in the UK. What actions can you take to mitigate the effect of the price cap?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, in the price cap, I think the methodology is correct. The margin are too low. The margin, I think if somebody filled in with less than 2% or 2% margin, a business like that one, where you're moving billions of pounds, and you have already risk of a lot of things, bad debt, failures, et cetera, you can already leave. I think, in my opinion, is not correct, and we are already just in discussion and in comments with the regulator in this sense. The second one, as I mentioned, is I think it's important the data use for fixing this cap will be very real, will not already what they would like to be, but I think what it really is, I think is if the cost of service is a number, is the cost of service a number, it's not another one. If the gas losses are 5%, it's 5%, it's not 1%. And I think we'll be delighted to be another number, but if that is the reality, that is the reality with the meter register. So, but I think saying that, I think we have been working since the last few years to try to improve our efficiency in long terms. I think we have invested almost £300 million in a new IT system for billing and for customer care, et cetera, et cetera, just to be able to make the things in a much more efficient manner. So what I think we continue working in this direction to be more efficient, to try to minimize. Nevertheless, I think the range, then we are seeing the effect, you know, that we are the less affected of all the companies in UK. I think our standard variable tariff is affecting, and we are less than a million customers of those one, toward our competitors, we are already 60, 70, 80% of the customer in this tariff. We are already much less in our total number of customers. The effect in our case will be in the range between, let's say, 40 and 80 million pounds. But I think we are working the 40, with the actual methodology is applying the numbers, which are current numbers, it should be 40. If they are not applying correctly, what we hope, then the British regulator will understand the numbers properly and they use the numbers properly, as I mentioned in my speech. I think that will be already almost doubled in these numbers.
Okay, this question comes from Jorge Alonso, Secretary General and Manuel Palomo, Exam BNP, and is regarding the UK supply business. What is the main challenge in managing UK supply unit with our traditional generation assets? The second question is, could Iberdrola eventually consider exiting UK supply activity or join merge it with other players?
Well, I think since long time we in UK we are short, so I think we are being forced to buy electricity for selling in retail. So I think we are not depending since long time of our power generation. We are selling much more than we produce. So which I think that is two absolute different business, which are not relation between themselves. So I think that is going to continue in the same way we've been already been up to now, with a positive thing, which I think we were losing money in this traditional power generation. We are going not to lose money in this moment, so which I think the losses that we are suffering during the last recent years in our power generation, now we are going to have this effect. So I think that will have a positive effect in our business there. So I think that's... No.
Okay, next question comes from Carolina Dores, Morgan Stanley, and Javier Suarez, Mediobanca, and is regarding the results yesterday released by Avangrid. Avangrid is guiding towards the lower range of EPS guidance for this year. What has driven the weaker results?
So I think, as I mentioned, they are already been suffering some impact of the minor storm. You know, the system in US GAAP, they are the biggest storms, they are already been are included in the net risk rate, and the expenditure is included in the net rate cases as part of the to be already paid during certain number of years. But the minor rate cases, I think, is considered as a cost. I think this year they already have the bad fortune that they are the numbers of a small storms are already affecting negatively to that one, and that is part of the cost. I think another year the situation goes different. I think that is one effect. The second effect is the thing related with the wind performance. I think in certain cases is better, in other cases it's worse. But mainly in this year, the main reason for that one is due to the minor storm. And I think in renewables, you mentioned Pepe. You mentioned.
There has been some startup issues and transmission outages in new wind farms, and they have had some higher corporate expenses related, especially to taxes. As you know, we need to make a big investment plan to there, and so that has been the main issues.
Next question is a couple of them comes from Mickey Becker, Bernstein, and the first one is, how is the efficiency program in Brazil progressing compared to the business plan, and what further step are you planning? And second is, how you are progressing in the deployment of renewables capacity compared to the business plan?
In Brazil, both things, or globally?
The first one is Brazil, the second one is global.
Well, I think in the first one, I think we are already just rationalizing all the things. We are concentrating our networks in Bahia. We are already standardizing all our equipments. We are benefiting of better acquisitions. We are changing the system that we were already externalizing. We had a lot of activities externalized. Now we are already internalizing this one, which are more efficient. We are working hard against losses and the calling of the plencia and the bad debt. So all these things are already going on, and I think that is something which is already generating effect. So which I think is an ongoing thing which will continue in time. It's already achieved part of what we are expecting, but still the target is to continue reducing costs in a very, very important manner. Related to the program of renewables, I think as I was already mentioning, we present to you what we are doing at present. We are already in the United States in this moment, 1,000 in construction. We are already the offshore in Germany, the offshore in Britain, the offshore in France, the offshore in the United States. We are starting making some one onshore in Spain. We are already building a new photovoltaic. We start recently two new photovoltaic power plants in Mexico. We are completing another two in Mexico. We are already almost 400 megawatts in Brazil. I think we are in line, and I think that's continuing in the same according with plan. Even in the case of offshore, even we are more than we were expecting.
Next question comes from Jorge Alonso Sogen and Javier Suarez Mediobanca, and both like to know a clarification on the expected net debt level for the full year of 2018.
Yeah, we are expecting to close the year with a net debt of around 33.2 billion, so we are talking around 1.1 billion below the closing of the third quarter results. So as I was mentioning, basically driven by the divestments and good performance in the fourth quarter will allow us to reduce our debt by the end of the year in more than 1 billion euros.
Next question comes from Jorge Guimaraes, de Haitong, and he's asking about if we can elaborate better on the one-offs mentioned in 9 months 2018 report in the U.S. renewables. What was their size? Probably Pepe can give some color.
Yeah, I think that we were talking around 10 to 15 million, and this is basically to compensate, as the chairman has mentioned, that during the first half of the year we have had some also extraordinary negative impacts, basically coming from delays in startups and some transmission outages in new wind farms. Okay, so basically this is compensating, these extraordinary problems that we had at the beginning of the year. And basically it's coming from the sale of receivables and some transmission rights.
The last question comes from Jorge Guimaraes Haitón as well, and he's asking about when are the new hydro projects in Brazil expected to be operating and what could be the impact on P&L.
So if I don't remember that, the Baixo Iguaçu is one of them, which is going to come into in service at the end of the year, beginning of next year. And another one is Belo Monte, which is already just started some of the turbines in operation, but I think during next year almost all will be already in operation. So I don't know the precise number, but perhaps Ignacio, you can already make this number, you can already give to him, not in mind. But both are already a positive effect in the P&L.
Okay, so after almost 55 minutes of result presentation, please let me now give the floor to Mr. Galán to conclude this event.
So thank you very much for participating in this conference call. I hope to see you at next in February 2019 in London, in our presenting our full year result and our investor days, as traditionally we are used today, in which we will have the opportunity to update our long-term plans, which, as I mentioned to you, we are very optimistic about how the things are going on. So in any case, whatever question you may have, please, you are investor relations open to reply to all of you. Thank you very much for attending the meeting. Thank you.